Welcome back, everybody. This is Still Talking. I'm Kieran Lyon. I'm the guy who doesn't shut up about sports. That's ELO, Last Train to London. What a great song. What a great band. So many hits. Listen, I got some... The theme of today's show is going to be coaching. I didn't go into my notes, you know, I didn't start making my notes with that deliberate intent, but afterwards when I was done, I realized that I'm talking a lot about coaching and how much it really matters in sports. And I think everybody knows it matters. But I think what often gets overlooked is the subtle nuances and how much impact those have. And I want to start things off in this coaching segment, or this coaching-themed episode of Still Talking. I want to start off with J.J. Redick, because a few months ago during the offseason, J.J. Redick was hired by the Lakers, and I came on here and I said that, you know, I was uncertain. Much like my takes on Zach Edey as a player, I think I overthought J.J. Redick. Look, right now the Lakers are 7-4. They're in the sixth seed. And I know the sixth seed doesn't sound like too great, but, I mean, that's a playoff spot that they haven't held in recent years. And they're only two games behind the second seed. I mean, we all know the Western Conference is a total bloodbath, but here the Lakers are at 7-4. By the way, better record than the Nuggets. And they're only a few games behind the second. I think they're only three games behind number one. And to me, when I watch the Lakers, or even when I just think about the Lakers, they seem much more like contenders than they have in recent years. Like, okay, 2019 when they first got LeBron, and then 2020 when they won the championship, obviously. Those 2 years, the Lakers felt like a team to fear. Like, those felt like contending teams to me. And every year since, they just haven't. Because to me, there were just glaring issues that I'm a Raptors fan, and the Raptors recently have just sucked. So, like, we'd lose to the Lakers. But if I was rooting for a certain team in the playoffs, I was never truly worried. I mean, yes, the Lakers did make the conference finals. And I know this isn't really a great argument to make, but that felt a bit fluky. But what I'm seeing thus far from the Lakers is much more reminiscent to the Lakers of 4 or 5 years ago than it is over the last few years. And the only real change is coaching. Like, LeBron and AD are still their best players. Austin Reeves is still there. D'Lo is somehow still there. The bench has changed a bit. There's been the whole thing with Bronny. But Dalton Knecht is a great pick. Like the only real difference, again, I know Knecht is a rookie. But yeah, the only major difference is J.J. Redick is the head coach of the Lakers. And again, when he first got hired, I came on the air, and I said, you know, I'm not sure. I don't really understand what this move is. There were better options. I didn't think that it would translate that well, or at the very least, I thought it would take a long time for it to translate into something positive. And it gave me shades of what the New York Jets are doing with Aaron Rodgers, where they're just bending over backwards for him and letting him have his way with everything and all the coaches he wants and whatnot. But, and I thought they were doing something similar with LeBron, because understand, like, remember, when J.J. Redick got hired, he had just started doing a podcast with LeBron. And that's kind of the unfortunate downside of him being the Lakers head coach, is we don't get that anymore, because the handful of episodes we did get were fantastic. It was just awesome to listen to those two geniuses talk about basketball. And you could, you know, there's a real care, or there's a real passion for it. And I think that's what I overlooked with J.J. Redick, is I didn't realize just how much he cares about the little things and all those nuances in coaching. I always knew J.J. Redick was super smart. I always knew he was like a bit of a basketball nerd. I think he's called himself that. And I always, I mean, as an NBA player, especially a savvy vet who spent however many, like 10 plus years in the NBA like him, obviously he knows the X's and O's. But I didn't understand, and I guess I overlooked how creative of a coach he can be. Because I watch the Lakers now, and yeah, Darvin Ham set a pretty low bar, but I'm very impressed with how much more of a cohesive unit the Lakers are. I mean, they're getting easy buckets. It felt like with Darvin Ham and with Frank Vogel, like, and all these other coaches they had, every basket they had was just a Herculean effort, usually on the part of LeBron or AD. And that's just not the case. J.J. Redick smartly understands that LeBron is not the best player on this team. Like, Anthony Davis is clearly the best player, and I feel like that was something that no one really ever wanted to address or admit. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and act like I always knew LeBron wasn't the better or wasn't the better player. No, I thought LeBron was the best player, but I was wrong, like a lot of people. J.J. Redick proving that he sees something that others don't. And it's kind of crazy that we overlook this, because that's how he's been in every facet of his basketball career. As a player, he would see things that others didn't. J.J. Redick was never an all-star. He was never like an all-NBA player. But he carved out a fantastic career for himself. He was an incredibly valuable, effective player in his role. Again, he did what others overlooked. Then he retires. He goes into analytics. He becomes an analyst. And he would do the things as an analyst that other members of sports media wouldn't. He wasn't, you know, farming for clicks. He wasn't just loud to try and get attention. He wasn't boisterous. He was smart. He put in the effort. I could tell when J.J. Redick would go on First Take or when he would go on to his podcast or whatever, I could tell that there was a lot of effort put into the craft. There was a lot of effort put into the process. And more importantly, or not one of the more important things that also often gets overlooked in media, was the delivery of it all. Like, I'm a big Colin Cowherd fan. And while I disagree with a lot of his takes, what I enjoy so much about Colin Cowherd, especially compared to like Stephen A. Smith on First Take, is, you know, I can tell that there's effort put into the process and the notes and everything leading up to it. And then there's care put into the delivery. And that's what J.J. Redick did. Again, he was one of the few in NBA media to be really like doing that on like a big platform like that. And NBA media, if you're a basketball fan, you know it is not in a good place. It is, dare I say, rotten. And here was J.J. Redick doing that. And so then when he gets hired as the Lakers coach, I don't understand how I didn't see this. This is totally on me. Like, I don't know why. I didn't think that he would be able to see the things that others weren't willing to look for or admit. I thought that J.J. Redick, because of his relationship with LeBron and his past as an NBA analyst and how recently he retired to then going to become one of the younger head coaches in the NBA, I thought that would be a huge distraction under all the lights in L.A. And then there was all the thing about Bronny. And, you know, I thought that would be a distraction, but I was wrong again. Darvin Ham, I'm looking like, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Darvin Ham was so much more of a distraction. J.J. Redick has been, like, I don't want to say a shadow, because, like, I don't want to infer that he's a shadow of himself, because he's not. He's awesome as a coach. But he's kind of just in the backgrounds tinkering with things, and he's been so effective at it. Darvin Ham was such a distraction because he was so hilariously bad at being a head coach that those LA lights, those Hollywood lights, would just be shined on him. And when they lose, just even more. All the pressure just mounts up even more every time they lose. And J.J. Redick's winning, guys. J.J. Redick is much more technical. He clearly cares about strategy, and he's creative with his usage of this roster. Darvin Ham seemingly didn't know how to make adjustments. I mean, there were just consistent bad coaching decisions. There was just malpractice everywhere. There was the LeBron minutes restriction at the start of last season. He wasn't ever really using Anthony Davis correctly. He wanted him to be like a secondary, and in a couple of cases, AD was kind of like a tertiary presence. And the bench utilization was just not good. Then J.J. Redick has seemingly fixed all of that. Like, the Lakers under Ham would always lose to better coached, more fundamentally sound teams, teams like Denver and Golden State. And the roster was never bad. I mean, I never thought that it was like a number one top-tier contending roster. It's not the Thunder or the Celtics. But under J.J. Redick, they're just so much more cohesive. And like I said, Anthony Davis is now the primary player. J.J. understands he's the best player on this roster. LeBron isn't bad. LeBron's a close second. But I think what J.J. like smartly understood was that LeBron at this current stage is best served as the secondary player. Because when you put less on his plate, LeBron is able to use his all-time greatest of all-time skills. And he has less to worry about. He has less to do. Like I said, every bucket for them last year was just a Herculean effort, usually on the part of LeBron or AD. And, you know, you'd watch games and there would just be LeBron trying to do everything he can. He's the one bringing up the ball. He's the one facilitating for others. He's the one driving to the paint. He's the one getting rebounds. He's the one playing like hard on defense. And LeBron, since he can cover all positions and play all positions on offense, he was doing all of that. J.J. understood that, you know, Anthony Davis can do most of those things too. Anthony Davis is one of the best players in the NBA. So let's make him the focal point on the offense, and let's let LeBron sit back. Let's make him do less. Let's put him under less pressure so that he can be much more effective. And what are we seeing? LeBron has three straight triple-doubles, and he's 39. In a month, he turns 40. We never saw a stretch like this from LeBron last year. I mean, well, we did. But, like, this was... I think this is special. I think this three-game stretch is different because the Lakers are winning games. there's really no other thing. There's nothing else to say. It's as simple as that. The Lakers are winning games. And Anthony Davis, like I said, now that he's the primary offensive focus, he's averaging a career-high in points. He's averaging 30 points per game. Now, here's an interesting thing. This is why I think with fans, they look at stats, right? But stats aren't singular. They're not in a vacuum. You have to look at them in conjunction with other stats. And in the context of sports, you have to look at them in conjunction with other players and teams and whatnot. So Anthony Davis, like I said, he's averaging 30 points per game, which is a career high. Now, someone might look at this and say, okay, well, but his rebounds and his assists are down from last year. And that's true. He's averaging, albeit slightly less rebounds and slightly less assists. And so you might say, okay, sure, he's scoring more points, but is he really a more complete player? Statistically, yeah, you'd probably draw the conclusion that no, he's not. But this is why you have to look at other things, because you look at LeBron's stats. LeBron's points are down from last year. Last year he averaged 25.7, now he's only averaging 24.3. I mean, only averaging. That's still a really good number, and that's not a huge change. It's really only marginal. When you look at LeBron's rebounds and assists, oh, they're both up. His rebounds are up 8.1 to 7.3, and his assists 9.4 to 8.3. LeBron is almost averaging a triple-double. And like I said, over those last three games against Philly, Toronto, and Memphis, three straight triple-doubles. So LeBron's points go down, but his rebounds and assists go up. AD's points go up, his rebounds and assists go down. It's a two-way relationship. It's dynamic. It's, what's the word I'm looking for? It's reactive. And this is just so much more effective. LeBron is not the focal point of the offense anymore. Or he's not the focal point of scoring, rather. Because LeBron is so good at everything. And I don't think they have a real trusted point guard yet. I mean, D'Lo is hot and cold all the time. And Dalton Connect is just a rookie. So LeBron, you know, is still bringing up the ball. He's still facilitating. But now, since he doesn't have to score, he doesn't have to be the guy, you know, like going to the rim, getting a layup, or getting a jump shot. No, he's able to facilitate for AD. And because LeBron is so good, defenses are trying to react to him, and they forget about AD. And then Anthony Davis goes in and he scores. Anthony Davis is also seems to be much healthier. I mean, he did just have an injury. I didn't look into that, so I don't know exactly the severity of it. But he seems to be playing better. Oh, he obviously is, but he's healthier. I think he, you know, I get the feeling that by the end of the season, he might shed the street clothes nickname, which is a bit unfortunate because I do think it's a funny nickname. But altogether, the Lakers are just so much better as a complete unit. Like, they're not just two guys and a couple of solid but inconsistent bench players. Lakers, their offense, I was just talking about how good their offense is. Statistically, last year they were 15th in offensive efficiency with a 113.6. This year they're 6th at 114.2. And I know that number-wise that's not really a big difference. But, like, it's a small difference, but it still means so much because they're not just getting better in points. They're setting themselves above other teams. Now, I don't want to anoint them as true contenders just yet. There's still a lot that remains to be seen. I still need to see the entire roster become complete. Like, I don't think they'll compete with the Thunder, provided the Thunder are healthy. I don't think they'll compete with Boston. Cleveland looks so good right now. I mean, they're undefeated. Like, those are the three teams I think are cut above right now. But the Lakers right now are ascending while other teams in the West are descending. Denver is struggling. Minnesota is 6-6. Dallas, who I'll get to, is just absolutely terrible right now. So here are the Lakers. They're ascending. They're rising. They're shedding a lot of their demons. And that's all thanks to J.J. Redick. So I guess as an apology to J.J. Redick, hey, if you're listening, I'm sorry, man. I overthought it. I didn't think that it was the right hire. And I'm wrong. The Lakers going forward, they have a nice stretch here. I don't know. It's like 10 or 12 games-ish. And they have a lot of really beatable teams. San Antonio is, you know, they're good, but he can beat them. The Lakers can beat them. They got New Orleans, Utah. Orlando still doesn't have Paolo. Denver does not look like themselves. Phoenix is a team that the Lakers can go toe-to-toe with. The Thunder right now are very hurt because Caruso's out. Chet's out for like 2 months, and they don't have Hartenstein. I mean, the other day they were playing Shea at center, so they can beat them. Minnesota is struggling. I mean, I did think that they would. I thought they'd have a slow start, and that seems to be true. So they can beat Minnesota. Miami, Atlanta, Portland, Sacramento twice, Detroit. These are all beatable teams. The Lakers could go on a really good run here. And the only downside of that is they're the LA Lakers, so ESPN's not going to shut up about it until 2 months later when the run's over. But the Lakers, I think by the end of December, the Lakers are going to be in that contending conversation. I think that they'll be mentioned alongside the Thunder and the Celtics and the Cavs. Hopefully the Bucks, although they don't look good. I was just talking about how bad Darvin Ham is. Well, the Bucks don't just have him. They have Doc Rivers, too. So, very impressed with the Lakers so far. They're shedding a lot of these bad narratives. They're shedding all of their issues. And I think they're in the middle of like a transformation, an ascension. I do want to talk about the Mavericks. Because right now, they're the 12th seed in the West. They're 5-7. They have a losing record. And if you're a listener of this show, if you remember back in May or June or whatever, during the NBA Finals, what was I talking about with the Mavericks? It was how bad of a coach Jason Kidd is. Jason Kidd needs to be fired immediately. I said it because they had me going on a rampage during the Finals. That it's so unfortunate that Dallas made the Finals because J.J. Redick is clearly not a good coach and they are winning in spite of him. But since they made the Finals, they're going to think, well, he was good. Let's keep him around. That's not the right decision. J.J. Redick is not... Oh, no, sorry, not J.J. Redick. Sorry, have I been saying... I meant Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd is not a good coach. He needs to go. The Mavs right now, again, 12th seed, 5-7. They're not themselves whatsoever. They just lost to Utah. Utah. I don't care that Kyrie didn't play. You should not be losing to Utah when Luka... you have one of the best players in the NBA, and he's dropping 37. That is so emblematic of a lot of the issues with Dallas. They're terrible defensively, and their depth, it's not that they don't have it, it's just that there seems to be holes on this roster, especially on defense. And teams like Utah, like we saw last night, they can take advantage of this. Utah wins by two, 115 to 113. They won on a last-second dunk from John Collins. If you watch that play, it was a total defensive lapse. Total. They just, it was an inbound, and they just weren't focused on defense at the most, like at the pinnacle of this game, the most important moment. They were not focused on defense, and they let John Collins get the easiest dunk of his life. And in that game, they were behind late. Like, Utah was up by 9, 11 points, like 8 points. They had multiple different leads, but there was in that range of like 7 to 11 or 12-ish points for most of the fourth quarter. The only reason why it was close is because they had this late game surge that was mostly Luka. Because again, Luka is so good. He's just such an elite scorer that he can bail them out of games. And that's what they rely on too much. Because last year, the Mavs clutch time record, they were 23-9. This year, and again, they've only played 12 games. This year, they're 1-6. Seven of their 12 games are in the clutch. And they're 1-6. They rely too much on that. That tells me that Jason Kidd isn't making the adjustments. He has no idea what he's doing. Much like Darvin Ham with the Lakers last year. Darvin was just relying on star talent to bail them out. He was just relying on LeBron to be a hero and bail them out. That's exactly what's happening here. And it's going to be tough for Dallas to fire their head coach that just got them to the finals, even though he didn't really get them to the finals. But it is absolutely the right decision, and they should not keep him around another day. He's why they lost in the finals when they could have beaten Boston, and he's why they're losing now. They rely too much on just Luka. That's it. And in some cases, Kyrie when he plays. But I think something that people don't really understand about the Mavericks last year is that, they caught lightning in a bottle. I'm not going to call their finals run a fluke, because that, I think, is just disregarding all the great things that they did. But they really did catch lightning in a bottle. They're what, the 5 seed? Like, and I know it's... And I'm not blaming people who don't realize that. I mean, in the moment, I didn't. But we do get caught up in the moment. We do get caught up in the recency bias all the time. And when you have a team that has players like Kyrie and Luka and has good young players like Derek Lively and makes a nice trade at the deadline, like it's hard to like step back and realize, oh, you know what? They're on paper, they're really not the best team in the West. But here they are. They're winning the games. Again, they caught lightning in a bottle. And they went on this hot streak, and that's how they got to the finals. But then you think of the Stars, and you think of where they finished last season, and you think, oh, they're obviously one of the best teams in the West. And that's not to say that they're bad or that they should be seen as bad going into the season. It's just that we tend to overinflate teams that go on these surprising runs without acknowledging the issues. And the primary issue in Dallas is Jason Kidd. Like, this start to the season that they're having, this losing record, like, at the bottom of what is a incredibly competitive, tight Western Conference, this is what happens when you have a coach who does not have a complete or a balanced scheme. They're 14th in defensive efficiency. And you see, that again, it's emblematic last night when John Collins gets that last-second dunk and had no issues whatsoever doing so. Jason Kidd needs to be gone, and it's a tough pill to swallow having to fire him, because, again, it's bad looks to fire your coach that just got you to the finals. But if they were to do so, I'd be very, I don't want to say proud, but yeah, I'd be proud of them, because they're willing to do the tough thing, and that's what winning franchises do. They make the tough decisions. They do the things that, you know what, it's not sweet, it's bitter, but it needs to be done. Dallas needs to take their Buckleys because they've got an illness. Another coaching fire. Well, yeah, speaking of coaching firings, the Bears, they actually made the right decision firing a coach. They got rid of their offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron. They fired him on Tuesday, and this is the first midseason offensive coordinator change for the Bears since 1970. And it couldn't have come at a better time because they're coming off a 3-game losing streak. They're 4-5 right now. Like, 3 weeks ago, they were 4-2. They look good. They were competing for the title in the NFC North. They're competing for a playoff spot. And then they go into Washington, and they only score 15 points. They lose on a Hail Mary. But still, the offense looked like crap. Then they go into Arizona, and they get blown out 29-9. Again, offense just looked terrible. And then New England, they lose 19-3. They only scored 3 points against New England, and they, like, these are teams that they really should have beaten. New England, yes, especially. But Arizona and Washington, they should be competing with. The offense has looked just absolutely abysmal for Chicago. And you know what? You know what's so aggravating about it? Is that it's affecting Caleb Williams' progression. Caleb Williams is this fantastic quarterback prospect that they took first overall, and they're ruining him like they do with every good young quarterback they have, whether it's Justin Fields or, I guess, Mitch Trubisky, you know, because they don't ever do quarterbacks well. They just suck at it. And here they are, served up on a silver platter as Caleb Williams. Thank you, Carolina, and they're screwing him up. Like, I don't want to say none of it is Caleb's fault, but it's tough to overcome some of the issues in Chicago. 1,700 yards, 9 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He has an 81 passer rating and a 38 QBR. He's not good. And that's made especially true when Jaden Daniels is having the season that he's having, although he wasn't great last night at all. If I have time, I'll get to that. The Bears have possibly the worst offensive line in the league. They've allowed the second most sacks this season at 38, and they've allowed pressure on 43% of their pass plays. Caleb Williams, what is he supposed to do out there? His O-line is terrible. His coach is calling bad plays. Oh, and his receivers, two of them don't care. Rome Odunze is a rookie, so he's trying to get used to this league alongside him. But his two vets, Keenan Allen and DJ Moore, are quitting. Keenan Allen, you watch the film. He's just like jogging out there. He's not running tight routes. There's no effort. And then against Arizona, DJ Moore quit mid-play. Caleb Williams was running for his life because, again, his O-line can't block. DJ Moore is running the route, and he walked off the field onto the sideline. And then afterwards, he said, well, I had an injury. I mean, his coach backed him up, so I guess that makes it valid. But it's not a good look. Caleb, what is he supposed to do out there? His O-line can't block, his receivers don't want to try, and his coach was calling the worst plays. It was a terrible hire in the first place. Even Eberflus still needs to be fired, by the way. Like, Eberflus was a bad hire at head coach, and then Shane Waldron was arguably a worse hire at offensive coordinator because we saw how bad he was in Seattle. He got canned, and he thought, oh, that's the guy we want for our young quarterback. I don't want to just take away all the blame off of Caleb. There are issues that he needs to work on. But understand this. He is still a rookie quarterback. And I think, and I want to make emphasis of that because fans and analysts have gotten so used to rookie quarterbacks playing well. This is, like, these past few seasons is a total abnormality in the NFL landscape. It is completely unheard of to have this many good, great even, rookie quarterbacks. I mean, in back-to-back seasons, this year and last year, we have rookie quarterbacks in MVP conversations. C.J. Stroud was the MVP favorite for a few weeks last year. And then Jaden Daniels seemingly is brought up in every MVP discussion, although it's obviously Lamar Jackson. And then a few years before that, Justin Herbert, while he wasn't in MVP talks, he like ran away with Offensive Rookie of the Year, and he was fantastic. So we see things like that. We see all these other young quarterbacks having success that we forget that he's still just a rookie. I think moving forward for the Bears, like, I think in beyond this season, they obviously need to get rid of Eberflus, and I think that they will. But, you know, if they actually do that and they hire a good offensive coach and they get Caleb help on O-line and they get either different receivers who care to run their routes or get their current receivers to run their routes, then you'll see the Caleb Williams that was promised to us in the draft. In these next few weeks, they got the Packers, who right now are 12th in yards allowed with 320, and they just traded Preston Smith. I think that's a winnable game for Chicago. The Vikings are on a downward spiral. That's a winnable game. Now, the Lions are probably not going to win that, but they have a bad secondary. So I think these next three games is, now that Waldron's gone, is the perfect chance for Caleb Williams to just show everybody his true potential. I want to thank a family friend, Jeanette McCullough, my mom's old colleague. She's listening in today. At least she said she would. Hi, Jeanette. I want to give you a shout-out. Che vuole questa musica, an Italian song I really like. Have a good weekend, everybody. Amen.
noche più nulla. Vorrei sentire ancora le tue parole.